Our second case this morning is 2019-181, the State of Ohio versus John W. Long. Mr. Clerk?
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. The state and Mr. Long both agree on one thing, that the delay between remand and Mr. Long's second speedy trial motion was long enough to be presumptively prejudicial under Doggett versus the United States. The Second District came to another conclusion, holding that the relevant time by which to measure a constitutional speedy trial delay was between Mr. Long's first speedy trial motion and his second speedy trial motion. Because the gap in those two motions was less than a year, the Second District found that that was not a presumptively prejudicial delay under Doggett versus the United States. This court should reverse that erroneous decision and hold that filing a motion to dismiss alleging a speedy trial violation does not reset the constitutional speedy trial clock. The date of remand is the proper time. And the court should do it for two reasons. First, resetting the speedy trial clock after a premature motion disincentivizes asking for a speedy trial when that relief is still available. A rule that does not reset the clock encourages all parties to be open and transparent about the requested relief.
The state doesn't disagree with you on this point, right?
No.
I mean, so the real issue is this delay reasonable, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And on that question of remedy, I would ask this court to vacate the conviction, or to vacate Mr. Long's conviction without a remand, because the Second District properly held that the remaining three Barker factors weighed in Mr. Long's favor.
But wouldn't we remand in light, if we agree with you, assuming arguendo, wouldn't we remand for them to review the Barker factors in light of our agreement with your position?
You could, yes. I would ask you not to.
Why?
Because the Second District properly found that the remaining three Barker factors weighed in Mr. Long's favor. There's in a four-factor test where the length of delay, the triggering factor, invites a review of the remaining three factors, the Second District still did review the reason for the delay, whether he timely requested a speedy trial, and the prejudice. And the Second District found that each of those remaining factors weighed in his favor. So if all four factors remain weighing in Mr. Long's favor, I'm asking the court not to remand for consideration of the remaining factors, but to hold that since all factors weigh in Mr. Long's favor, the only appropriate remedy is vacating the conviction and dismissing the indictment.
Counsel, what's our standard of review?
An abuse of discretion, Your Honor. Well, this is a de novo question, so that is complicated.
That's why I ask. Yeah.
On the question before you, the proposition of law, it's a de novo standard of review. The question of how the Second District was to weigh the Barker factors, there's some courts in Ohio that say it's an abuse of discretion. There's some that say it's a mixed question of law and fact. I'm asking this court to rule on Mr. Long's proposition of law under a de novo review, accept the remaining Barker analysis done by the Second District. And once this proposition of law is plugged into that analysis, dismissal is the only remedy.
But if it is an abuse of discretion standard, that's why I was asking about the remand. Shouldn't we remand it for them to implement, if we agree with your theory, those other factors, knowing that the time frame was prejudicial?
So I think that the remaining factors were already considered by the court, and that's why the remand for reconsideration is not a good use of judicial efficiency. I think if we had a case where some of the Barker factors weighed in Mr. Long's favor and some weighed in the state's favor, and there was a complicated balancing to do, it might be appropriate to remand for reconsideration.
But
that's not this case.
But we look here at the prejudice factor in particular. I mean, the court, it did say it weighed marginally in its favor, but if we look at what it actually said. It said that because the incarceration is not extremely protected, and he had not endured unduly harsh degrees of anxiety or concern, the court would not presume prejudice. And it didn't find any particularized prejudice to him. So although the court said it did weigh marginally in his favor, this is not the kind of prejudice that other courts have found dispositive in these kind of things.
There's a couple responses to that question. First, importantly, the Second District found that the 11-month delay was marginally prejudicial to Mr. Long. 11 months is under the 12-month standard for presumptive prejudice from Doggett. Now we're looking at a 17-month or 18-month delay, which is presumptively prejudicial under Doggett. So what is marginal in the Second District's opinion is going to necessarily become less than marginal once the delay is accounted for.
But when you get to the actual I agree with you that it's presumptively you have to go look and see if there's actual prejudice or not here. But here, there's really very little evidence of actual prejudice. I mean, the court only cited basically his anxiety.
Well, Doggett speaks to this, and Doggett identifies three types of prejudice that come from a prolonged period of pretrial detention, and is in a Sixth Amendment speedy trial analysis. There is both the pretrial anxiety of having an indictment hanging over your head. There is the oppressive pretrial confinement. And then there's a showing of actual prejudice to the defense. The United States Supreme Court in Doggett acknowledged that a showing of actual prejudice to the defense is going to be very difficult and often impossible to prove. But the remaining two versions of prejudice remain relevant in this case. In lower courts' case law and this court's case law that deals with Doggett-style prejudice, often the pretrial anxiety or detention are not dispositive in situations where somebody is at liberty in a prolonged delay between indictment and arrest because they don't know that the indictment's hanging over their head and they're not in jail. Mr. Long was in jail for 500 days awaiting trial after remand. That causes anxiety. That causes a certain amount. The oppression of that can lead to consideration of pleas that might not otherwise be considered.
Well, counsel, the second time he was sentenced, he had a reduced sentence, correct?
He did, yes.
Went 11 years down to 5 years?
Yes.
And he was given credit for almost 2 years that he was there?
Yes. And the longer that you...
Does that work against your claim of actual prejudice?
I don't think it does. I think it works towards my claim of actual prejudice, actually.
How?
Because once Mr. Long's conviction was vacated and he was remanded, he was once again presumed innocent. And he's sitting in jail, and the longer he sits in jail, the more beneficial a five-year plea begins to look. And if there is a prolonged period of time where somebody is sitting pretrial, that kind of pincer movement can be used to encourage a plea that might otherwise be rejected.
Counsel, in the state's brief, they raised the issue of potential mootness. Any response to that? Is he's out, right?
He's out, yes.
He's finished his post-release?
He has.
Okay.
And he has a felony record for the first time in his life.
Okay.
Under a misdemeanor, there's jurisprudence for this court that it would be moot because the sentence is served. But he has a felony criminal record. And that means that this is a live issue, considering the relief Mr. Long is requesting. If there are no further questions, I ask that this court, in light of the prolonged 500 days of pretrial detention after remand, I ask that this court find that the proposition of law that we've asked for is appropriate and vacate Mr. Long's conviction and dismiss the case against him. In the alternative, I ask that the court remand to the Second District. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you call recess?